I'm sure you can look at the slide and guess we'll be in the book of Daniel this morning. So please turn your Bibles to the book of Daniel. And we're going to be primarily in chapter 6. Daniel chapter 6. While you're turning there, we'd like to welcome all those that are visiting with us. It's such an encouragement to have those that place an importance upon worshiping the Lord their God today. And we're glad that you've chosen to do that alongside us this morning. There are many characters within the Old Testament that are examples and encouragements to us. We were talking about Ezra this morning in our class. We had just finished talking about Esther and Mordecai. We could keep going and make a long list. In fact, the Hebrew writer did make a list in Hebrews chapter 11, talking about those that were of faith from of old, that they stood as examples for us. Paul, in writing to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 11, he said, "These things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction, on whom the end of the ages has come." And we typically refer to the Old Testament as that tutor to bring us to Christ, not my words, Paul's words. Yet it is an example as well. These characters of faith have something to teach us along the way that we might benefit from sharing these things with us. And the faith of Daniel has always been an inspiration, and it's one that our children study in Bible classes and should, because Daniel, when he begins to make his journey of faith as what is presented to us in this book of Daniel, is a fairly young man at that time. He's a young man, but he's a man of strong conviction. He's a man of strong faith. And he purposed in his heart in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 8 that he would not defile himself. That is, he would not partake of anything that would interfere with his relationship with his God, Jehovah, the one true and living God. Likewise, Daniel should also be an example to those of us that are older, because his example of service and commitment went through his entire life. It was not limited to just when he was young. It was not limited to just when it was easy. And it was not limited to even times of trial. Sometimes it's almost easier to be faithful when we know for a fact that something would be wrong to do than it is to carry on day after day after day just simply doing what is right. And so we can read of his faith and we can be encouraged of these things. And so we're going to look at Daniel in chapter 6, what we typically refer to as Daniel and the lion's den. So let's start reading. We're going to break this up into sections as we go through this lesson. Daniel chapter 6 and verse 1 states that it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give account so that the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps because of an excellent spirit that was in him. And the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Then the high officials and the satraps, they sought to find a grounds for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom. But they could find no ground for complaint or any fault, because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." Then these high officials and satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, "O King Darius, live forever. All the high officials of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the counselors and the governors are agreed that the kingdom should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked." Therefore, King Darius signed the document and injunction. Well, we see a little bit of similarity with them approaching King Darius than we saw with Esther, don't we? Let's come and let's flatter the king, and let's tell him that what we propose is in his best interest, and what we want you to do is to glorify yourself, appealing to ego and appealing to greed. And it's interesting that they make that statement that we've all agreed, yet there's one particular individual that was left out of all of this. Because this individual would not have agreed. And that was Daniel. But let's notice that Daniel is very successful. We've seen that all the way back to the beginning of the book of Daniel, that his God was with him because he was faithful. And God was blessing him in that position, as we see other people in the Old Testament blessed, going all the way back to thinking about Joseph and his place in Egypt. And so this kingdom is Babylon, Chaldea. It is recently conquered by the Medo-Persian Empire. Chapter 5, verse 30 and 31. That very night, Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was killed, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. And historians say, well, this Darius the Mede is a little bit uncertain, thinking that he's possibly known as Gubara, which was appointed by Cyrus of Persia to rule the region of Chaldea. But what we're seeing is that Daniel, because God is with him and because he has this excellent spirit, that he excels above all others. And as it states, they couldn't find any fault with regard to the kingdom. In other words, he did his job. He did his job well, and he did his job honestly and faithfully in service to the king. And so looking for some way to say that he has had some wrongdoing was a fruitless endeavor. And this tells us that one can be successful in whatever endeavor we undertake, as long as it's not a sinful endeavor. We can be successful in business or in our other endeavors without compromising our character. The world would have you think, well, you've got to be ruthless, you've got to be underhanded, you've got to be dishonest to get ahead. But this shows a faithful individual can get ahead because of their faith, and they will be found faultless in their business dealings. And so Darius is thinking about putting him not just in those three high officials, but now to be put even above them, so that everyone would report to him except the king himself. And so Daniel is envied by his peers, if you will. It is the success that they envy. It is the power that is being contemplated in giving to him that is being envied. And even the most godly men can have enemies. We've seen it time and time again. David was always plagued with one enemy or another. And he wrote extensively about it in the Psalms. Even the Son of God, Christ himself, had enemies, people that opposed him. We can do everything honestly, faithfully, and still have enemies. And that is because of jealousy. That is because of this envy that we're speaking of. And so Daniel is of this noble character. And even his enemies would have to admit that, because they can't find any fault. They're able to make no charge against him because he was trustworthy. He was a dependable individual. The king knew that. His peers knew that. And so his enemies determine there's really only one way to defeat him, and that is to set a trap. We know what kind of character this individual has. We know what his habits are. He didn't hide his habits about his service to God. We know what he's going to do, even if we set this law, set this in order. If the king agrees with us, we know how he's going to react to it, so we can use that against him. That's what they're saying. And that's exactly what they set out to do. And so the king is approached by these enemies, proposing this royal statute, a formal decree that cannot be revoked even by the king himself. We saw that in the book of Esther as well. No petition could be made of any god or man for 30 days except the king. Now remember that we're talking about an idolatrous nation. And not only that, we're talking about a mixture of cultures and religions within this area that this king is ruling over. So this is kind of a big deal for him to state this, even leaving Daniel out of the picture. There's a lot of people, I think, that would have been a little upset by this, simply because they were devoted to whatever god or religion they were following, wouldn't be happy about them saying, you don't get to worship them or pray to them for 30 days, only to the king. But that is what is presented. And so you can see how this would appeal to the king's ego. Because of all of those different religions, all of those different idols, including this Jewish God Jehovah, all these people would have to only pay homage to the king for 30 days. In essence, what these individuals are saying is, you're greater than all these gods. That's what they're telling him. And so it appeals to this sense of ego. No petition could be made for 30 days. And the punishment would be to be cast into the den of lions. And so they convince the king that this would be a good thing. And it's only temporary. After all, this is not a lasting thing. Sure, you can't revoke it, but 30 days, that's only 1 month. I can just imagine the thought process that'd be going through their minds and what they might have said in addition to what is recorded for us. But Daniel's faith in God brought him to success at this point. Would Daniel dare to turn away from that faith just because of this 30-day decree? They knew the answer. Daniel knows the answer. I think you and I know the answer as well. And so then let's look in verse 10, beginning. When Daniel knew that this document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. This decree did not change anything for Daniel. He is not going to change at all. And we're not even talking about one time. He's doing this 3 times a day, just as he had done previously. These men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. Not only did they set it up, now they're spying on him to catch him doing it. Then they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction, O king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? Well, they knew the answer to that. They were setting it up. The king says the thing stands fast according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. Then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day. Again, I see a similarity to the book of Esther when that framing of words was used concerning the Jews. You have a people living among you, those exiles of Judah. That's the way he's presenting this here as well. Almost as if they are all troublemakers, but especially Daniel. Especially Daniel. Then the king, when he heard these words, he was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel. Apparently he hadn't thought all of this through and realized that Daniel would have been the first one to be caught in this trap. They appealed to his ego and he signed the document, he signed the decree. But now when he realized it's going to impact Daniel, who is very successful under him, who he was going to set above everybody else, he wants to deliver him. And he labored till the sun went down to rescue them. Him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, Know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and the Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. So not only do they put this stone over this den of lions, but they seal it and they each put their signet into the seal of this, not just the king, but the king and all the lords, so that if anybody tampered with it, they couldn't redo that seal in such a way that it would be shown the next morning to have not been tampered with. And so let's understand that when Daniel knew the decree, he continued to pray. He completely ignores it. This was a custom among the Jews that was very common, this idea of three times a day. It doesn't mean that's the only time they prayed, but it means that they set aside those times to pray. Psalm 55 and verse 17 says, "Evening and morning and at noon I utter my complaint and moan, and he hears my voice." That was the common practice among the Jews, those three times a day. In 1 Kings chapter 8 and verse 27, it says, "Will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold, heaven and the highest heaven cannot contain you. How much less this house that I built? Yet have regard to the prayer of your servant and to his plea, O Lord my God, listening to the cry and to the prayer that your servant prays before you this day, that your eyes may be open night and day toward this house, the place of which you have said, my name shall be there, that you may listen to the prayer that your servant offers toward this place," that is, toward Jerusalem. That's what Daniel's doing, is he's praying, and he's praying toward Jerusalem where that temple would have been. And he gets down on his knees. He assumes a particular posture in his prayer, and very humble posture. And he prayed, as it states, with thankfulness to God, which reminds me of Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6, when Paul said, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." That's exactly what Daniel was doing. You don't see him sweating bullets, if you will, over deciding, am I going to pray or not pray because of this decree? No, he does as was his custom. And so he let the anxiety go, and he trusted God, and he approached him in prayer. And it states that this has always been his custom since his early days, at least back as far as we've been seeing from him in the book of Daniel. And even though he has grown in his success, even though he has grown in his political power, he continues to rely on God and not on self. But his enemies, again, they have set this trap. They're not going to just let the trap be unsprung. They're going to watch him. They catch Daniel praying. They report that to the king. They remind him that this is an unalterable decree, that he can't take it back, even though it says that he labored trying to find a loophole, if you will, that he could let Daniel out of this, because he did not want Daniel to be thrown into this den of lions. But the king is forced to abide by his own decree. And the king's pretty displeased. And again, just kind of putting my own thoughts into it, trying to put myself in the shoes of the people within this recorded factual story, I can imagine the king, after this, knowing that it is Daniel that is caught in this trap, that he's kicking himself. He likes Daniel. He cares about Daniel. And so he'd be kicking himself, thinking, "I can't believe I succumbed to this trap." He sees now exactly what it was. It was a trap for Daniel. And so he's very displeased with himself. But nonetheless, he cannot change it. And so he is put into that den of lions, and he says, "May your God save you." The king is holding out hope. And this is not an empty hope. This is a hope that has been fulfilled before. You remember that Daniel was not the only young Hebrew that was brought to the palace. There were three of his friends. Do you remember those friends? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Do you remember them being thrown into the furnace? Do you remember them not dying in the furnace, even though the furnace was so hot that the people attending to it died stoking the fire? Daniel's not the only one that the Lord was watching over, and Daniel was not the only one that was serving faithfully so that the Lord would rescue him. So they seal this, and they ensure that that purpose concerning Daniel could not be changed. So beginning in verse 18, Daniel 6, verse 18, "The king went to his palace, and he spent the night fasting." Now let's think about fasting for a moment. The idea of not eating, and for a night like this, probably not drinking anything, just not partaking in any satisfaction of the physical body at all. This was a way to humble oneself. That's what fasting was primarily for, was to humble oneself and to focus on worship when we're talking about servants of the one true and living God. But here the king's doing it. The king's pretty distressed. No diversions were brought to him. Sleep fled from him. It was a sleepless night. He couldn't sleep because Daniel is in that den of lions. Then at the break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to him, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, because I have been found blameless before him. And also before you, O king, I have done no harm." I'm going to stop right there, because Daniel was not bitter. And I think it would be so easy to be bitter. It'd be so easy, even with the Lord rescuing him, to be in that den of lions thinking, "I have done nothing but good for this king, and he threw me in here." But no, he gives respect to the king, and he says, "O king, live forever." And so it's important for us to realize that particular attitude of Daniel, that he was not bitter at this moment. His focus was not on his enemies. His focus was on God. The king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no harm was found on him because he had trusted in his God. And the king commanded, and those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and cast into the den of lions, they, their children, and their wives. And before they reached the bottom of the den, the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces. When we see artist renderings of Daniel in the lion's den, we tend to think of, well, two lions, three lions. That's usually what I've seen, someone drawing this and putting it in a children's book, for example. But it says that those individuals that accused Daniel, that them, their wives, and their children were all thrown in there, and before they reached the bottom, the lions overpowered them and broke their bones in pieces. There had to be a lot more than just a couple of lions in that den. I have no idea how many it was, but it had to have been more than just a small number. Yet the Lord protected Daniel. After this, King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, "Peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed. His dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So again, he had this sleepless night. He didn't find any rest. He didn't find any satisfaction. He was anxious for Daniel. Even so much that the moment the decree's been fulfilled, the break of day, he's out there at that den of lions crying out to Daniel. But Daniel was delivered. Daniel's story just keeps being an amazement to us. That young man that started out with just give me vegetables and water has now risen to the point of he's going to be second in command to the king. He has enemies that set this trap. He's thrown into this den of lions. And his attitude continues to impress us. And what the king here states is very similar to what was stated by Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 3 and verse 28, when he said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God." So now we've had two kings with two incredible instances that result in glory given to God even by those who were not true believers. I'm not saying they didn't believe in Jehovah, But they were not believers to the point that they would forsake all others and proselyte themselves into the Jewish religion, at least not as far as what is recorded for us. But God has delivered Daniel, and now everyone is going to know about it. Everyone. And not only this, the king affirms his innocence as Daniel claims his innocence. The king doesn't make any issue with his innocence. I don't think the king ever thought Daniel was guilty of anything except that this trap was set before him. And what did Daniel think when it came down to, do I listen to the king's decree and avoid praying to God for 30 days? Or do I do as I've always done and pray to him morning, noon, and night? I imagine his thought was the same as the apostles. We ought to obey God rather than men. That's what Daniel did. But outside of making that choice, he was not guilty of anything. And so then these conspirators are executed, cast into the same trap that was intended for Daniel. Now we can see another parallel. It should remind you a couple of weeks ago of us talking about in the book of Esther, that Haman was hung on the gallows that he wanted Mordecai to be hung on. He built those for Mordecai. He wanted Mordecai to be put up there, but instead it was he that ends up on those gallows. In Psalm 7 and verse 14, David writes, "Behold, the wicked man conceives evil and is pregnant with mischief and gives birth to lies. He makes a pit, digging it out, and then falls into the hole that he has made. His mischief returns upon his own head and on his own skull. His violence descends." Sooner or later, the wicked end up paying a price. Now, elsewhere, David wrote the question of why do the wicked prosper? He also saw instances in which they dug traps for people and they didn't fall in. They didn't get caught in their own traps. But even if that is the case, even if the wicked prosper, they will still answer for their wickedness. Make no mistake. Solomon, in writing in chapter 1 of the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 1, beginning in verse 10, writing as if he's speaking to his son, he says, "And if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without reason, like Sheol, let us swallow them alive and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all precious goods, we shall fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot among us, we will all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. For in vain is a net spread in the sight of any bird, but these men lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors." Don't go with them. Don't be a trap setter. Be a faithful one whom the Lord delivers. And out of all of this, an entire nation knows what happens and God is exalted. He makes this decree that this God of Daniel, Daniel the Hebrew, Daniel the captive, that his God should be feared. He is the living God. He is steadfast. He is forever. His kingdom is indestructible. His dominion is everlasting. If you back up in Daniel to chapter 4 and verse 34, Daniel 4 and verse 34, it says, "At the end of days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, and he does according to his will among the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand or say to him, 'What have you done?'" We're beginning to see a trend. These kings that cannot deny that there is something different about this God of the Hebrews. This Jehovah God, He's the one that's truly in power and control. In chapter 5 and verse 26, we read of Belshazzar as well. It says, this is in the interpretation of the matter. Daniel 5, verse 26. Meaning, God has numbered the days of your kingdom and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Belshazzar, too, came to recognize that God was in control, though that was just as he lost his life. And out of this, Daniel continues to prosper. In the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus of Persia, he excels. Daniel's entire life was marked by faithfulness. An entire life that said, I will be faithful to my God, I will obey Him, and I will not let man deter me from that path. And so what we see with Daniel is that excellent spirit. And because of that excellent spirit and because of him following the Lord his God, he is found to be without fault in his business dealings. Why is that? Because a follower of God is an honest individual who is not trying to be greedy for unjust gain in any way, but simply doing what is right, what is righteous, which is also what is honest. And that means that he's faithful to those over him. I mean, we can relate Daniel to working in a workplace. It doesn't have to be a palace. It doesn't have to be a kingdom. It can be, you know, the business down the street that we might work for. We need to do exactly what Daniel did, which is do our best and be faithful to those whom we answer to, so long as they do not require us to transgress the law of God. And by so doing, we will glorify Him in the way that we live our lives. He was committed to prayer throughout his life. Again, the three times a day, but I'm sure it was more than just those three times a day. Always willing to obey God rather than men. See, Daniel and the lion's den is not just a lesson for the children. It's a lesson for all of us about faithfulness in every stage of life. And while we may not be faced with being thrown into a den of lions, we are faced with a world and with an adversary that would prefer that we do not be faithful, but that we succumb to the temptations that would lead us into sin and thereby lose our souls. But nonetheless, we must remain faithful so that we will be delivered ultimately to be in heaven with our God. Daniel is a role model for all of us. May we all learn from that example. May we all glorify our God in heaven by the way that we live each and every day of our lives, despite any opposition that may come our way. The lesson is yours this morning. As is our custom, at the end of a lesson, we extend an invitation to those that may have need. If you realize that your life is not pleasing to the Lord, you're not in a covenant relationship with Him, either because you have not repented of your sins, confessed a belief in His name, been baptized for the remission of sins, living a new life for Him, or because you've not been faithful to that commitment, we want to extend an invitation to you that if we can help you in these spiritual matters, please just make it known to us. Number 837 has been selected as an invitation song. Won't you come forward as we stand and as we sing?